This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, you're listening to Up the Ante. I'm Angeline Tay, and usually what we do on this show is we invite entrepreneurs to share their challenges and their experiences and how we can all learn from it. So today, with the increasingly global market, you can't start a business with just one country and one region in mind. We're kicking off a new series on Up the Ante to leverage our knowledge gained from markets outside of Malaysia through entrepreneurs who are now running their businesses in our country. So this episode, we'll welcome the co-founder of Service Hero, Nicole Sia, and also Yoni Laimala, our recurring guest. But today, he's coming as a founder of AdCoin, so welcome back.
Thank you.
You know, first off, Yoni, you're going to be with me for the next three episodes talking about how we can leverage knowledge we learn from overseas. First, introduce yourself.
Sure. Some of you who have been listening to BFM for over the past few years may know me as the corporate man, and I've been here as a marketing consultant doing different kinds of shows. So now, finally, I'm kind of like coming out of the closet and explaining myself that, hey, I am a true entrepreneur by heart. And over the past year or so, I've been running my own startup, which is called AdCoin. And what we do is we're creating native digital currency. So it is basically a microcurrency for using across different verticals.
So Yoni will be with me to try to get as many information we can from Nicole Sia. So tell us a bit about your background.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on. Essentially, my mum's Australian, my dad's Malaysian, but we moved back from Australia when I was like 2 years old. I then grew up in a very small town called Segamat, north of Johor. Not many people have heard of it. And I went through the whole Malaysian schooling system. So after SPM, headed off to Australia, where I went to school. I went to university there and worked for a few years. So I was mainly with KPMG in Melbourne in property. And then the opportunity came up to move to China. So it was a bit of a crazy choice. I guess it was like, oh, why don't I go back to Malaysia? Oh, come on, let's go to China. It's even more wild than Malaysia. So I went off to China. I spent 7 years in China. Mainly, the first role I had was basically setting up a property information service for Jones Lang LaSalle, where I traveled to over 25 tier 2 and 3 cities in China. It was a bit daunting when you're 27, being thrown in the deep end, going to tier 2 and 3 cities in China.
What do you mean by tier 2 and 3? What are they like?
So the tier 1 cities are like Shanghai, Beijing, Guangzhou. Mm-hmm. Then you have tier 2 cities like Suzhou, Hangzhou. So obviously, the lower the tier, the less international.
Right.
It's
wild enough to keep you there for 7 years.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure there's quite a lot of war stories from that era or that period of professional career.
Well, it's shaped me to what I am today.
Right.
It's made me much more resilient. But it's funny, those who live in China always joke, you know, you kind of have to push your way in China to get, like, kind of have to be a bit curt and rude sometimes, for example, to get a bill. If you're nice about it, you just wait and wait. So
when you came back here, did you start pushing the waiters around for
the
bill?
Oh, no. Well, yeah, I had to, like, remind myself, Nicole, don't push your way. Don't be mean. And then I had another job where I used to help brands enter and expand in China. So fashion brands like Ted Baker, Stella McCartney, Argent Provocateur. So it was really fun, you know. I mean, it was finding real estate, but you kind of had to understand how a brand should be placed, or, you know, the positioning. So being a shopaholic was really good. Anyway, a new job then took me to Singapore, where I was with Al Capital managing a brand called Jones the Grocer. It's real estate. Later in last year, Carl, who was a good friend from China Days, some of you may know of Carl. I met him 7 years ago, and he joined this little company called Groupon as employee number 12 and then grew it to 3,000 people. So Carl's always been this entrepreneur who runs around the world, full of energy, starting all these tech startups and selling them. And Carl finally said, Nicole, I'm coming back to Malaysia. Let me show you what I've been working on. So I looked at it and I went, oh my God, I would totally use this app rather than spend 2 hours going through, you know, websites or yellow pages and then having to call each and every service provider. You just use the app. You put in, it takes you 10 seconds to put in a job request, and then you go off and do other things, go watch a movie, go have a shower, and then within a few minutes, few hours, you'll get 3 to 5 quotes. I think above all was the ratings and feedback that other people have left. So it's like crowdsource reviews.
So you said yes to Carl's offer?
Correct.
I mean, what was your role?
Because I come from a property and construction background, I was more inclined to the business development side. So there's two parts of my role. Number one was finding investors and also exploring new countries for expansion, which goes hand in hand with what I used to do. And we often joke, I'm quite a good networker, I'm quite a good researcher, so we call it squirreling. Like Carl goes, Nicole, go squirrel. I'm like, all right, I'll go squirrel and I'll find out all these contacts and background information that we need. The other side of my role, and which I focus a lot on in the beginning, was the acquisition of heroes. They're actually the service providers on our app. At the end of the day, they're a backbone to our business. Without them, we have nothing. And so they're very important to us. Because I used to be in construction, it was very easy for me to speak to an air conditioning technician, a plumber. And because I speak English, Malay, and Chinese, I can switch between three languages very easily. That really was good, yeah.
Mm-hmm. When Carl called you when you're in Singapore and said you would totally use the app, but at the same time, you don't know what was the market like here.
Okay, I've never worked in Malaysia,
yeah.
But I do understand consumerism in Malaysia well enough. Mm. So I thought that was transferable. Yeah.
What were the challenges then when you were trying to acquire all these heroes?
I would say we actually thought it was going to be a huge challenge. Mm. The ironic thing is we started marketing, I think, around April, going out to service providers or even talking to them over the phone and sold them on Service Hero before we even had an app to show them. But, you know, sometimes it's also just talking to them in a lingo they understand.
Yeah.
And also, like, for example, I had a lot of Chinese air conditioning uncles were like, oh, I don't want to use this app. It's too hard. And I'm like, all right. So, uncle, do you use WhatsApp? They're like, yeah, I use it every day. I run my business on WhatsApp. And I'm like, did you use it 5 years ago? And they're like, no. Okay, yeah, all right. We'll give Service Hero a try. So it's all about educating them. Mm. But once you've educated them and show them how easy it is, they're really cool.
We're going to learn more about how do you plan to grow, because I think one part of your job is to develop the business, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll find out more after this together with Yuni Lamala, co-founder of AdCoin, and Nicole Sia, co-founder of Service Hero. This is Up the Ante, BFM 89.9. Good morning. You're still tuned in to Up the Ante. I'm Angeline Tay. And in the studio, we have Nicole Sia, co-founder of Service Hero, and Yuni Lamala. Well, he's the founder of AdCoin. And today we're sort of kicking off the first episode on returning Malaysians and starting their own business here and what can we all learn from them. So you came back, you joined Carl to start Service Hero here. What was the business development side of things work from for this year?
So the year is drawing to a close. It's crazy how fast the year's gone by. So we're present in three markets in Malaysia, JB, Penang and Kuala Lumpur. And we're in Singapore. We are doing research now. We have spent some time in the field, going to regional countries, basically going there and understanding how people order services. What is the landscape? Is there a need for us? Will there be product fit for Service Hero? Should we be adjusting the Service Hero model in those countries?
I actually get a question to you. Like when you go to any of the markets around the region, and especially in Southeast Asia, do you ever face sort of a little bit skeptical looks when you say that you're from Malaysia? Okay, let me lead in a little bit about where the question comes from, because of the fact that I'm based in Malaysia and I've been living here for the past few years now. So I tend to make myself believe that, okay, I know the market somewhat all right. And I obviously traveled a lot around the region and I've seen different places and how they operate and what the cultures are and all that lot. And the key thing is that whenever I go to any sort of new business meeting, whether it's with a partner or investor or whatnot, if I say that, okay, I'm running a Malaysian company, it's always like, okay, let's see. Yeah, let me see when I have the time for you. But if I say that, okay, I actually run a U.S. company, which AdCoin is, it's right away like, okay, so can we meet now? Like,
okay.
It's there's a drastic difference in terms of still sort of like these perceptions and kind of, I don't know if it's credibility or what it is, but I do get that response out of him.
Okay, I can understand where you're coming from. I guess somewhat Service Hero, I think we're a bit fortunate that, for example, we have our team on our website and we find that a lot of people or potential investors actually spend a lot of time studying that section of our website. So whilst we are Malaysians and all that, I think they've been suitably impressed that Carl's managed to bring together such a good team in a short time. I think above all that Carl's managed to entice us to leave our amazing, high-paying jobs overseas to come and do a startup in Malaysia. So I do understand where people are a bit skeptical about Malaysian origin companies, but we're very fortunate that in the last few years, for example, Grab Taxi. I mean, Anthony's done an amazing job expanding Grab Taxi to 6-7 markets. He's a unicorn, so highly regarded. So I think people think someone else did it. Why not these guys?
Well, it obviously takes the pioneers to sort of like ease out the way and pave the way, I should say, probably. And those are the kind of people, those are the kind of companies which definitely help it out for all the others who are trying to make it international. And I think one of the key things in here, like you guys are now thinking about expanding around the region, because Malaysia as a market itself is just not big enough. If I go through any of the startup events, if I go through these accelerators, incubators, and all the other people who work with graduates, who work with young entrepreneurs, a lot of them tend to be a bit too, I'm kind of like, I don't want to use the word, unfortunately, I have to, a bit narrow-minded in the sense of market opportunities because of the fact that they all concentrate on Malaysia alone. I would want to see, whenever there's somebody, okay, who's just graduating now, stop thinking about Malaysia. It is a global world. If you're a Malaysian and now, thanks to the likes of, as you mentioned, Anthony, and yourselves as well, I guess, there are people who have already paved that way. So any entrepreneur who's coming out there, think about what are the opportunities also outside of Malaysia, because that's going to help Malaysia as well. Not only to then make it easier for anybody who is following you guys, but also it's going to make it all the services that you're building or all the products that you're building better for Malaysians.
Well, it's not going to change overnight.
No, of course.
It's a slow process. And I think, I hope that the fact that a lot of people like Carl, myself, Jason, we've all, you know, left jobs overseas and that's one of the reasons why we're coming back. You know, we're bringing our overseas expertise, our MBAs we've invested in and hopefully, you know, transferring that knowledge.
I think it's different context because you're bringing the experience in. Mm-hmm. But say, for example, you were to compare Service Hero with the other competitors, right? What are the advantage that you have? You know, local entrepreneurs, Malaysian entrepreneurs should learn from.
At the end of the day, I think we're all competing in a very similar space, whether we have fancy degrees from overseas or not. It's how we execute at the ground level. And I don't believe whether you're locally educated or overseas educated, mm-hmm. whether there's a huge difference. It's innate. It's in the person. But one thing is I'm so happy to see that there are competitors. It actually means that there is a big gap in the service marketplace. There is huge inefficiencies. And it's great that we're all coming back. And you know, we all have the same aim, to make Malaysia a more efficient, safer place for services.
Well, usually it is a very good sign if you have competition because of the fact that it's also a market validation.
What did you bring from experience abroad into Service Hero?
Okay, I was a retail broker. I think the generalization of real estate brokers is they're a resilient bunch. They don't give up. When you want something to happen, if door A doesn't open, you go door B, C, D, E, F till it opens. So that helps. I guess also having worked in very structured environments like Australia, we're very process-driven here, putting in place strict SOPs that we can easily scale and transfer.
If you don't mind, I'll jump in a little bit. There's actually a couple of really, really important points. One of the things that you said, because you talked about kind of like the perseverance and just go through it. And then if A doesn't work, go for B and then C, D, E. I think that is absolutely spot on. Just because of the fact that you kind of think that, okay, it didn't work. Oftentimes people go into either, oh, I'm not good enough, or, oh, the business doesn't work, oh, or the market's not ready or whatever. Don't give yourself excuses.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can say straight away, my first presentation, and this is after almost 2 decades giving speeches, being in a public speaker, et cetera, et cetera. My first presentation as AdCon was a complete failure. Like, it was a complete bust. Nobody understood what the heck I'm talking about. It didn't matter. It's like, okay, well, this is one of those sort of growing pains of making that transition from being a corporate and being coming from abroad and then coming to the local market. I just have to take the hit. I have to adapt. I have to learn from it and then try something different. Let me go back a little bit into when you first came back to Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
And because you've been out for quite a while.
Oh, a long time, 16 years.
Yeah. So, which means that your contact network has probably shrunk quite significantly mm-hmm. during that time. And then you need to start doing biz dev, and you're starting from pretty much like complete zero. How did you go about it?
Actually, I wouldn't agree with that, only because thank God we have Facebook. Everyone's in touch. I think also the friendships you make as Malaysians living overseas is a bond which is really strong and tight. Also, leveraging off university alumni. You've got to remember, KL's small. It's not huge. The business community, somewhat, it's not transient like Singapore. A lot of people have been here and will be here in the future. Going out, catching up with friends.
That's still only going to get you to a certain part of the circle.
Yeah.
Like, that's still your inner circle only. Well, but then when you need to start penetrating towards the
investors,
partners, the heroes, all that lot.
Right. Okay. So if we look at investors, for example, Carl's been in the tech startup sphere for the last 7 years. He's, you know, the last company he did, one of the companies he did in South Africa was acquired by Naspers. So the story there was Naspers has only ever invested in one Malaysian company, being Lelong. So Lelong's one of our investors, and they actually have invested in Service Hero, and we got to know them how. Purely because Carl was in a South African company invested by Naspers.
Let's consider that as a quote-unquote lucky break, even though, of course, there's a lot of work that went behind it, and yes, you need to be a certain type of personality. For the sake of this particular show and helping the listeners a little bit, I'll divert away from this one and go, like, try to think from those moments where you don't have a contact and you need to try to go and figure out not only, okay, who should I meet, what type of a business, what type of a company, mm-hmm. but how on earth am I going to get in touch with them?
Okay, so I would say first look at your concept, look at who would be interested in investing in it and how your concept will be complementary to their existing business. Google search, we're lucky. LinkedIn search. I'm sure a friend, KL's tiny, so a friend of a friend would know someone. I mean, as long as you have a good concept, present it properly to someone. So go to them with a good slide deck, which hits the key points. Don't go to them with like a half,
how he did it for his first time.
Yeah, half big job.
Come
exactly.
on, I was prepared.
This is one of the tricks I've learned from being a retail broker is put yourself in the shoes of an investor or someone you're trying to attract. What would they want to see and how can you emotionally engage them?
A lot of people probably sort of overlook it a little bit. Raising money is going to take time. And it is one of those things that you need to go through, I don't even know how many rounds of discussions before it actually materializes and it happens. Mm-hmm. I've personally spoken to, I'm sure, more than 50 different investors. It just happens to be that some of them might be not interested, which is fair enough. It could be for a number of reasons. It could be that either they don't believe in you, and don't be put down by it. It happens. Some of them just don't see the potential in it. It could be that it doesn't fit their thesis because every investor has their own checklist of, okay, does this company belong to a certain industry that we would be interested in?
Yep.
Are they a certain type and da-da-da? And they have this. If you tick the boxes, then you're going to be able to have another discussion with them. But if you don't tick the boxes, then it's like, okay, hey, nice meeting you. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that you've been disqualified completely. It just means that now you're on their radar for future. Same thing goes. If somebody says to you, okay, you're not big enough, for example, you're not at that stage yet where we get interested, it's not a lost opportunity. That just means that then you can get a gauge from these people about, okay, so you're looking for this. I know now when I'm going to be ready for the next round. So, for example, oftentimes it's talking about like, what is the angel investors? What is the seed round? What is then pre-series A, then series A, B, C, and so forth? For a lot of entrepreneurs, this is like, oh, what the heck are these guys talking about? What? So the terminology itself can be a little bit intimidating and daunting. Don't take it in such a way. It's more about if somebody says, for example, okay, we usually do series A. It just means that they don't invest anything less than 7 digits in US dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not at that stage, they're never ever going to invest in you, no matter how much they believe in your idea and how great they think you are, you're just not ready for it yet. And don't take it as a personal thing. Every single entrepreneur who's looking for investments has to go through the same thing.
Yeah.
We've gone through it. I'm sure you've done your rounds. Everybody has gone through the same process.
You know, to add also, I would always say sometimes you may think a company would not be interested in you, but I would still knock on their door. You never know. YTL, until us, I believe, has never really invested in a startup. So we're one of the first they've invested in. I always think this VC funding thing is a bit like dating. It's a bit like when you go on a first date. You can't show all your cards. You can't be too keen. Could play a bit hard to get.
Okay, I think we need another show to learn how do you set up a good date with the investor. Thank you so much for your time. I've been speaking to Nicosia. She is the co-founder of Service Hero. And we heard the pains of Yoni Laimala here with his startup for AdCoin. I think next week's episode would be more relevant. We'll be having Tom Hall, who's the founder of InterQuest, an expat entrepreneur here in Asia. And what can we learn from them? Or what are the challenges as an expat have to go through here in KL? You've been listening to Up the Ante. I'm Angeline Tay, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.